Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm DJ.
And today we are getting into something really exciting. That's right, set reviews. Now, some of you may be groaning out there going, set reviews again? But it's a special set. It's Modern Horizons 2.
The cards look amazing. Modern Horizons 1 really added a lot of cool stuff to different archetypes, powerful cards, and this is shaping up to be really awesome, powerful stuff in here.
And not to mention, we may be talking about one of the best white cards ever printed for Commander. You don't say that every single day, but before we get into
Wait a second, we said that a previous...
for the Laurel Precon.
Maybe we've been doing... We will be saying this in the future.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be great.
New white staple every single episode.
Every episode we said that, then white would still be behind. Okay.
Oh, no.
Before we get into it, obviously, you're going to want to pick up that white staple and maybe the other white staples that we've talked about in the past. You can do so by heading over to cardthekingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. Look, we're talking about a lot of cards today. Modern Horizons 2 is here. You can pre-order or order it, depending on what time you're watching this episode. So use that affiliate link. It's easy. You're going to buy Magic cards anyway. Why the heck not? And while you're there, or maybe you're visiting your local game store, you want to check out Ultra Pro because they make amazing play mats. They have tons of new art as well for all of the art from Modern Horizons. There's always alternate arts and showcase frames and stuff that are coming along, and those arts look amazing on sleeves, deck boxes, on play mats. Maybe they don't put them... Yeah, they do put them on deck boxes. So Ultra Pro is your place to get that. I've been trusting them for, 15, 20 years now. My very first dual land was a Badlands from when I was like age 8, and it had it in an Ultra Pro hard case and sleeve, and it stayed in mint condition from that time.
Nice.
Good times. And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. You can watch our game nights episodes and extra turns a day early, as well as talk to us on our Discord at certain tiers. It's a great place to go in case you want to, you know, hook up with other cool Magic fans and discuss your love of the game. patreon.com/commandzone. We shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this week's episode is dedicated to
Irvin Zubia.
So today we're talking about the white, black, and multicolored cards in Modern Horizons 2. I like that you wrote this here, DJ. Make sure you subscribe and you ring that bell so you can catch all of the videos on our Modern Horizons 2 coverage. There's a lot to come. Let's start off. Let's not bury the lead. It's the new staple in white decks.
Let's talk about it. It is Esper Sentinel. The Woo-hoo. First card that we're talking about. Sentinel is one white for a 1/1 artifact creature human soldier. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell each turn, draw a card unless that player pays X, where X is Esper Sentinel's power.
Wow. Okay, so this is white's version of Mystic Remora / Rhystic Study. Is it as good as either of those?
No, it's not. But do you know what? It doesn't have to be. It's so good. Jimmy, did we need more cards in the world that say, did you pay the one?
That I say no to, but white I will make an exception for.
Exactly. Okay, so let's break it down. First off, Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora, they trigger all of the time, basically.
Yeah. You know? Mystic Remora is only non-creatures, and of course, Rhystic Study is every single spell.
Yeah, but this only triggers on the first spell cast each turn, mm-hmm. and it's the first non-creature spell. Okay. Now, I think that still taxes a lot of people, and it's still very relevant, but it is only affecting the first spell.
Right.
So that's significant.
Now, the thing about Esper Sentinel, though, is it's, right, if you look at the tier list, Rhystic Study is the best, but it costs 3 mana and it taxes every single spell. Mm-hmm. Mystic Remora is the second best. It taxes only non-creature spells, but it only costs 1 mana, but it has a cumulative upkeep.
But Esper, it taxes for 4, which is almost impossible to get through.
No one's ever going to pay that. You're going to draw that card. Esper Sentinel is the worst of the three, but still better than everything else that White has, pretty much, because it only costs 1 to pay, but it only casts, it only targets the first spell that an opponent casts each turn if it's a non-creature spell. And the Esper Sentinel's power is what determines what gets paid.
I really love the play pattern of this because Esper Sentinel comes down early enough that people that are playing their mana rocks, they're playing their ramp spells, their Farseeks, their Cultivates, everything like that. What are they going to do? Put their ramp off a turn? Yeah. No, they're going to let you draw a card.
Not to mention this is on cast. So if you cast a mana rock on turn 2, the trigger's going to go on the sack. You can't pay for it because the mana rock's not on the table. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could be like play an Arcane Signet and then, oh, I'm going to use that mana for something. But in this case, no, if you're paying 2 mana on your second turn and Esper Sentinel's out because it's a one drop, then you are gonna just let that person draw a card. Not to mention, if you do pump the Esper Sentinel a little bit, if you make it a 2-2, a 3-3, or a 3-1, then they have to pay that much. And then it really becomes impossible for them to do.
Absolutely. Anthems, equipment, a lot of pumping happens in white decks, and so you can get Esper Sentinel's power to be pretty big so that you're basically always drawing a card at the beginning of every, well, once a turn, non-creature spells.
Seems like a perfect include in any equipment deck. It is an artifact creature as well, so maybe you have some synergies there. I mean, look, this is a strong card. Not to mention, it's in white.
What I like a lot, too, is that it synergizes really well with my favorite white Muldrifter, Ranger Vios.
Ah, but it draws very specifically cards with one power,
yes,
right?
with one or less.
Yeah.
Also, Ranger Captain of Eos, too. Mm-hmm, there's artifact searching in white, and so really, this is going to end up being a staple in a lot of different decks, and you're going to hear, do you pay the one? A lot more often.
Yeah, a lot more often, but the player saying it's going to be happy they get to do so. It's, bottom line, one of the best white cards ever printed for Commander. Expect to see it a lot, and you will. All right, next up, we got Nykthos Paragon. 4 white for an enchantment creature human soldier as a 4/6. Whenever you gain life, you may put that many +1/+1 counters on each creature you control. Do this only once each turn. Okay, let's break this down. First up, that many.
I love when they put that many.
Yeah.
You know, we're used to just like you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter. That many means that you can gain a ton of life and drop a ton of counters.
Yeah. Gain 10 life, feed the clan. Put 10 +1/+1 counters on each creature you control. That is a lot. However, you can only do it only once each turn, but I don't think you need to do it more than once each turn if it's that many.
See, I think that what this does is that it makes it sort of a fairer commander card versus a combo card. Like, we know that with Archangel of Thune, you can go infinite with, like, Spike Feeder.
Or
some other cards, too, where basically you gain life, it pumps everything, and then you pull those counters off again to gain more life, and it sort of creates this engine. But with Nykthos Paragon, you can only do it once, and so it really is this sort of, well, I'm just going to gain a bunch of life and I'm just going to put a bunch of counters down. It just seems like a perfect commander card.
Even if you only gain one life, if you have a big go wide deck, so obviously Tristani Selesnya's Voice, which is going to be able to get you a lot of life more than once each turn.
Well, I mean, this hits the battlefield
turn.
And you gain, this hits the battlefield.
Right.
There's a trigger, you gain 6. It is on the battlefield when you gain 6.
Yeah.
That's immediately doing a good job.
And if you have cards like Wolverine Riders, which puts out a token every turn on each of your opponent's turns as well, and gains life when those elves come into play, then you're going to be doing this multiple times a turn cycle. Evra, Halcyon Witness, I still want to see someone build a deck with this where they smack you for a billion. And then, of course, you have your Aloros, which just consistently gain life. You got Karlov of the Ghost Council, Console of Allocation. These are all cards that will gain you life multiple times. That's how I think you get the most out of Nykthos Paragon, is that it can do it more than once per turn rotation, but only once each turn.
Yeah, you definitely want to take advantage of these counters.
Yeah.
You think it's a downside that it's six mana? I mean, it's a powerful effect.
It's a powerful effect. I think if you're playing in a life gain deck, you have to, you're going to put ramp in your deck anyway. So if this is one of your finishers, this makes perfect sense. This is the Sun Titan slot in white decks, right? So it's got to get you a lot of value. Obviously, if you're in a life gain deck and you are able to go even slightly wide, 5 creatures that all gain 5+1/+1 counters, that's still a lot, right? You don't need to have a board of like 20. You can have a board of even 3 creatures.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You don't need a lot to make this work or be really powerful enough.
Yeah. Play it with like Soul Sisters too and like Soul's Attendant or Authority of the Consoles, which is just going to constantly gain you life, and then blammo. But the setup is, it's a little bit of setup.
All right.
Oh, yeah. One last question. Do you think it's good in Aristocrats? Because you're always extorting or doing those sorts of things or pinging everyone for one and gaining one in return. Sometimes more than one.
So Aristocrats is a very tricky strategy because a lot of times you need a sacrifice outlet, sack fodder, and something to weaponize that sacrifice. And there are a few cards that double duty, but for the most part, you need all of that. And this is a payoff. It is a payoff
but
card,
it doesn't give
but it's
you
not
the
best payoff. It's not the one that drains. It's not the payoff that deals damage. It's not the payoff that immediately kills. So I think it's definitely down a tier when it comes to that.
That's a good read on that one. Okay, hey, look at this. We're at another white card that may be one of the best white cards ever printed for Commander.
I like it a lot. We'll go back and forth and figure out if it's one of the best ever printed. This is crazy. All right.
I mean, it's pretty darn good.
It's pretty good. Out of time. One white for an enchantment. When out of time enters the battlefield, untap all creatures, then phase them out until out of time leaves the battlefield. Put a time counter on out of time for each creature phased out this way, and it has vanishing. You know, so let's break it down. 3-mana enchantment that's kind of a board wipe. All the creatures disappear. But
they untap first, notably, and then they disappear.
Yeah, they disappear. And then out of time gains that many time counters.
Yeah, and then it has vanishing, which means at the beginning of your upkeep, you remove a time counter from it. And when it reaches zero, then you sacrifice the enchantment. Now, if this removes 6 creatures on turn 3 and the game ends by turn 9, out of time is taking them out of the game for the entire game.
Yeah, like, so I think that this is a very, in 2 players, it's a very unreliable board wipe.
Right.
Because sometimes you're playing this down and you're removing 3 creatures and you can see the game going 3 more turns.
Mm-hmm.
But in Commander, when there's 4 players, like, when are you board wiping just 2 or 3 creatures away?
Only if they're very scary.
Yeah.
Typically, your board wipes are hitting 7 or 8 things, and sometimes there'll be, if you kill a ton of tokens with this, right?
Oh,
that is a
never coming
bunch
back.
Of, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I should clarify, the tokens will come back. Phasing used to actually get rid of tokens, but it doesn't do that anymore. Yeah. Tokens will come back. But come on, if you have that many creatures on the battlefield, this will have a vanishing counter, you know, by the time the game ends.
Yeah, so someone obviously has to get rid of this enchantment to bring everything back. But this is a 3-mana get rid of everything. Most cases, I think, majority of the time, maybe not like 90%, maybe 70% of the time, it's going to be for the rest of the game if no one touches out of time.
So you did mention get rid of it. I feel like that's one of the downsides, if there is one, right? Because people play Reclamation Sages. They play, you know, tons of stuff that incidentally gets rid of enchantments. Like, have you been playing enchantment-based removal spells in Commander very much? Like, are you playing, Oblivion Ring? Like, are you playing Oblivion Ring in your decks?
I'm playing white, which I don't often, I would run something like Oblivion Ring. But you need to be able to get rid of enchantments because those typically are, I'd say, the most dangerous cards at the table. When people are comboing off or they're building a value engine that you can't beat, like a Great Henge or a Zendikar Resurgent. We've talked about these cards. They're huge mana sinks, and getting rid of them is really powerful for you because of the tempo loss. Out of time, you are bringing everything back. Now, notably, things aren't flickering, so they're not entering the battlefield again. Mm-hmm. So they just sort of like phase back in like they were stuck in time somewhere.
That is critical. The fact that everyone gets to rebuy their ETBs might mean that people are less likely to blow this up. Ultimately, I think it's a very cool and interesting board wipe. It can find places in a lot of different decks, but I think that a lot of people are just going to be scared about it being unreliable because the creatures can come back.
Yeah, and people should also be scared because out of time is a way to get rid of commanders. We haven't really seen this before. Before it used to be you could tuck them away, but because commanders are phasing out, they're not changing zones. So the rule that if a commander changes zone, hits your graveyard, hits your deck, hits your hand, you can choose to put it into the command zone. In this case, out of time does not give you that option. So you actually don't get your commander back from a board wipe like this. Your commander gets phased out. Now, if you have a sack outlet, great, or something, you can get rid of your commander, but out of time is actually
still, you're still, your spell is still getting rid of the commander. You
know, exactly.
I mean? It's even better if you can strand it in phased out mode for forever.
And so this seems pretty powerful. With 3 mana being the CMC or the mana value, you can recur it with a Sun Titan or Savin's Reclamation, which seems like a new white play pattern and is definitely bringing stuff back like that. If you're playing it in an Enchantress deck, you can flicker it a bunch of times with like Aminatu. So you can choose when to bring stuff out and put it back in. Because like, I'm going to get rid of everything, all phases back in, but then I'm just going to flicker back in and get rid of everything again because someone played 5 new things.
Well, in enchantment decks too, just it having the enchantment type means that it could get a lot of value. Like, hey, not only is this board wipe, but I just drew 2 cards and it triggered everything that I needed to and everything's good for me now.
Yeah.
You know?
Couple of other small combos. If you play Solemnity with this, it doesn't allow counters to actually go on the enchantment, so Vanishing will not work. It will just never get sacrificed, so it just becomes a, you have to remove this enchantment to get the creatures back. And if you have Opalescence, this is the funny one. So Opalescence is a card that says each other non-aura enchantment is a creature in addition to its other types and has base power and toughness equal to its mana value. So this would be a 3-mana, 3/3 enchantment creature.
So it enters the battlefield. It itself is a creature, too.
Yeah. Opalescence says, you're a creature. And then Out of Time goes, well, I got to remove myself and phase myself out. And everything goes away forever in that case. There's like one very small corner case to try and get it back. But at that point, Out of Time is itself phased out and will never get removed.
That way,
you literally get rid of people's commanders with Opalescence plus Out of Time.
That's fun. I like that.
Yeah, so Out of Time, very interesting. We've never seen a board wipe like this. This is like a almost kind of similar to what Teferi's Protection does, but just for all the creatures on the battlefield.
I'm a fan. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I just find it funny that they all untap.
Just because I think that they don't want this to be sort of a tempo thing.
Oh, I see.
Because if they're tapped when they phase out, when they phase back in, they're tapped still again.
Yeah. So they come back like very well rested from Purgatory. Okay, next up we have a card that is the first in the Suspend cycle.
Dun, dun, dun. This is a powerful cycle because we've got two cycles that we're going to be focusing on because everyone's excited about them.
Yep.
They're free spells, you know?
Yep.
There's the Evoke cycle. We'll get to that. But first we have the Suspend cycle.
Yeah.
And Suspend trades mana for time.
Yep, so we're going to talk quickly about Suspend here and just the general premise and why it's good / bad, and then we'll dive into the cards. We'll do this on all of our set review episodes just so you sort of get a good idea of how we think about the card, and then we can talk more about the card itself.
Right.
Okay, so what is Suspend, and is it good in Commander? So Suspend is a cost that you pay that has a time associated with it. So say Suspend X, and X can be a number, and then a mana cost. So rather than cast this card from your hand, you pay the mana cost and exile with X time counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, you remove a time counter, and when the last is removed, you can cast it without paying its mana cost, ignoring timing restrictions.
So for example, Resurgent Belief has no casting cost. You cannot cast it, so instead you have to suspend it. It says Suspend 2 for 1 and a white, which means that you'll pay 1 and a white, you'll put 2 time counters on it, and then every single turn you'll remove a time counter from it,
and eventually
on your upkeep, and then you'll cast it.
You'll cast it. Yeah, so you're trading time for mana.
And in many cases, you're trading time and mana for also an effect that is really difficult for Wizards of the Coast to reprint, a really powerful effect,
right?
A really crazy effect.
Yeah, like Balance, the card is banned in Commander, but Restore Balance, the Suspend version, is not.
Crazy. Okay, so let's break this down and find out how good Suspend is. We have to think, okay, well, there are very powerful effects that if we just read the card and think about it in terms of Magical Christmas Land, we could get really excited. But then in reality, how it plays out is that it ends up being unplayable because it is so telegraphed. It is susceptible towards interruption and counter and your opponents playing around it.
Or your opponents killing you before you even get to cast it, or the game ending as a whole before the card gets cast. So, and not to mention, if you draw a Suspend like 4 or 5 card very late in the game, then you are not in good shape, because who knows if that card is ever going to get cast. It's going to be so long living in Suspend. Now, there are ways to cheat it out. So if you cascade into a Suspend card, you don't need to pay the Suspend cost. You can just cast it. And there's some cards and commanders that do that. So there is a world where Suspend works better because you have ways of cheating it out and not having to wait for it to come out.
Great. So if you can cheat, then it kind of changes the math and everything's a blanket thing, because essentially it's not telegraphed. Mm-hmm. You are not trading time for the powerful effect or for mana cost because you're cheating it out. You're not suspending it. Okay. So basically the equation changes if you can cheat it out, but let's assume that we're playing this fairly, and find out, well, in this situation for this card, whether it makes sense.
Okay.
Sound good?
So Resurgent Belief, it's a sorcery. Suspend 2 for 1 in the white. So it's 2 time counters for 1 in the white mana. Return all enchantment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Ooh.
This is Replenish.
Yeah.
This is a powerful white card. Replenish is 3 and a white for sorcery that returns all your enchantments from your graveyard to the battlefield. And it is expensive.
Yeah, it's over $100 easily. It's in thousands of decks.
It's on the reserved list.
Ah, yes. There
so
you go.
So one thing that's crazy is that it's in thousands of decks, even though it's that price point.
Yeah, because this is a game bender in the decks that want it by bringing all of that stuff back from your graveyard for the cheap cost of 4 mana, right? That's a massive regrowth type spell. Similar cards that have this level of power are like Open the Vaults, Eerie Ultimatum, Wake the Past, but that's artifacts only, Dance of the Mance, but these get spendier in mana, and they also sometimes return things from your opponent's graveyards too.
So we could see the power level of this. Now, we have to think, okay, what does suspend 2 do to this spell? You know, so it's telegraphed. People can look at your graveyard. They know what you're bringing back.
That gives them a lot of chances to bajuka bog it.
So yeah, they can deal with your graveyard. You guys should be running graveyard interaction.
Everyone should be at this point.
But yeah, how,
it's pretty useful.
A lot of times we have incidental graveyard interaction like that bajuka bog that you mentioned. How often can you just like say, oh, I need to interact with a graveyard. I can get that right now. I have the toolboxes in my deck to be able to do it.
Instant speed, right? It's not as easy or as accessible. However, it's like, hey, you have 2 turns now to find a response to that.
And everyone has 2 turns.
Yeah, everyone has 2 turns. Everyone knows what's coming. Everyone can see that person's graveyard or knows, hey, if they just get certain things in there, they're going to win the game on the spot.
Counterspell.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a good answer to it. Everyone just says, okay, you actually mentioned something too. It's just like, oh, well, you can remove the player and the spell doesn't matter.
Yeah, so yeah.
You could theoretically put this on the stack and for 2 turns, you are the archenemy.
Yeah. Are you okay? Are you pillow-forded up enough to stop it? Because even if you are, Resurgent Belief sucks when someone just removes your graveyard.
Yeah.
What are you going to do then?
So the surprise factor of Replenish really does win games, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this one can't necessarily win games as reliably. It could just be a value, you know, Resurgent Belief, a value get like, I have 3 things in my graveyard.
If you're a deck that wants to run Replenish, then Resurgent Belief makes a strong case for being in that same deck. If you're just a, hey, I have a couple of enchantments and this seems fun, don't run it. Because if you're just getting a couple of things back and you scare everyone at the table because they see it being played, they're like, wait a minute, that's a very powerful effect. We got to team up on you. Then that's not good for you either, I don't think.
So how good is this suspend card and how does it fit in our evaluation of the suspend cycle?
I think this suspend card is very powerful because it's suspend 2 and there are ways to mess with time counters and it's not like a suspend 4 or 5 or 3. 2 turns seems a little bit more doable. There's more windows for you to play this and have it be impactful. But I do think it's bad because this is a game-winning effect and no one wants to see it happen and people will do everything they can to stop it. And if they know they just need to hold a counterspell up for it, that really feels bad.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like the more powerful game-ending effects in Suspend create way too much hate, whereas ones that are a little bit fairer, mm-hmm. a little bit more balanced, might actually be a fine trade for time versus mana.
Right.
I don't know. We'll as we go through more and more of these suspend cards, we'll keep up the evaluation. We'll keep thinking about it. But I think that a lot of people just look at Replenish on here and they're like, it's amazing.
It's easy to overrate.
I really do think it's easy to overrate. And I think that this might not actually see very much play.
No. Okay. Next up, Search the Premises. I love this art. 3 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, investigate, which means you create a colorless clue artifact token with 2 mana, sacrifice it, draw a card. This card is not good. I'm just going to put it out there.
But what? I kind of like it.
We've seen cards like this in the past where it's like whenever someone attacks you, do X thing, and then people just choose not to attack you or they get rid of the enchantment and you don't get the benefit. The benefit here isn't even that great, though, I don't think.
Well, I think it has to do with how you use the clues.
Okay.
You know, you can use them to draw cards. That's fine. But if you use them just to draw cards, I think that you've hit on something powerful, which is that's bad. Because then you look at the rate you're paying.
2 mana and something needs to attack you.
6 mana for your first card draw. That's awful. You know, 8 mana for your second card. 10 mana for your third card. Like none of those rates are good.
Yeah.
You know, and you're getting attacked every time. So I think that you need to have other ways to use your clues. Maybe you're going a little bit more clue or token tribal. Maybe you're doubling them up. Maybe you're, you know, turning them into something else. You're animating them.
Right.
You know, you're
Karn, ether grid.
Yeah. Them. You have Karn structs and this pumps them all up and stuff like that. So I think that you definitely need to use all of the other clues. I think one thing that saves it is that it's not saying whenever one or more creatures attack you, investigate.
Whenever a creature.
So any creature attacks you, you can investigate. So if someone attacks you with three creatures, then you find yourself having three clues. And I think having a couple clues lying around is good, but you can't, this is not a good card draw. This is a good clue artifact synergy card.
Yeah. Imagine you play this on the table and you just need card draw to start winning harder. No one's going to attack you unless you pose such a threat that not attacking you is a mistake, right? People just go like, I'm not going to give them a card in this case. There's a card called Farsight Mask. It's an artifact that any deck can play. It's one mana more. And you just draw cards if any source an opponent controls does damage to you. So you can get pinged, you can get burned, and you draw cards. That card I don't think is great either. And I think puts Search the Premises in an interesting position to see exactly how good it is. We've seen this now a lot, which is like four mana is the slot that Wizards is deciding. It's our powerful enchantment slot, like Smothering Tide and stuff. And I think Smothering Tide, just like, again, you have a lot of good comparison points to see where Search the Premises is, and it's not that high on the list.
I agree. I think that your four drop slot's going to get really crowded, like you mentioned, and like, just look at all the new four drops that we have across, you know, the last couple years, and it's just like, this won't measure up.
If you can just get an Esper Sentinel instead, play that.
Yeah,
instead.
For sure. All right.
For card draw specifically.
Sarah's Emissary. Four white for a 7/7 flying angel. As Sarah's Emissary enters the battlefield, choose a card type. You and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type.
Okay, so you can choose card types from creatures, enchantments, instant sorceries, planeswalkers. In this case, I think we've generally decided that creatures is the number one most chosen thing that you can choose. You and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type. So that means that you cannot, if you choose creatures, a creature will attack you. It won't do any damage because you have protection from that creature.
Yeah, I'm imagining the other types, and the other types are more, you know, interacting with the players themselves rather than you. Like, you say, I want protections from instance and sort or instance, you know, then their removal might not work on, you know, your creatures. But how often are you getting targeted with direct damage or direct discard or
not
something like that?
Not that often.
Yeah.
That's an instant too. Sorcery maybe a little more.
Exactly. And sorcery still, it's like, well, what are they aiming at you?
Yeah.
Or what are they aiming at your creatures? A lot of times sorceries are like a board wipe. This does not give you protection from a board wipe because it doesn't target.
Yeah.
You
know? I could see Sarah's Emissary being something that blanks. Let's say you're dying to an enchantment that's milling you cards or whatever. Or like a what's the grindstone? Like an artifact. Mm. Then you'd say, I want protection from artifacts because you're looking for protection for you. But generally, I think you want protection from creatures because this means that your creatures can't be blocked. You can't take damage from their creatures. Taysa, Envoy of Ghosts is a good example of this, and Blazing Archon as well. So I think this is interesting. I like this card a lot because it has flexibility. It's also just a 7-mana 7/7 flying angel with a cool ability on it that I think is very specific to what you need at the moment. So if you need protection from creatures because you want to swing in, or you want to stop taking damage from things, great, then do that.
Or
if a creature's like targeting you, right?
I really like a comparison to Archon of Valor's Reach. Four green white for a 5/6 flying vigilant trampling. And when it enters the battlefield, choose artifact, enchantment, instant sorcery, or planeswalker. And players can't cast those chosen spells.
Ah, okay.
You know, I think that's a powerful big creature, but also that creature didn't see a lot of play. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was, I know it's in two colors, but it's cheaper in mana cost. It actually shuts down some of what your opponents are doing rather than just being passive and protecting you.
Yeah.
So that has me thinking that this, you know, just working against creature decks or just giving your creatures, you know, free reign to attack might not do enough for 7 mana.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for a card like Sun Quan who just gives our creatures horsemanship and basically says unblockable, Sarah's Emissary can also do that effect as well in a way.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Moving on, we have a new cycle that we'll talk briefly about. This is the Evoke cycle. So evoking means you can pay in a different cost, essentially, to play this card without having to pay its normal mana cost. So in the past, Mold Drifter is a card that we always talk about. It has an evoke cost of 2 and a blue. And so you get that. It enters the battlefield. You can draw 2 cards. And then the evoke says sacrifice a creature after it enters the battlefield. So you get the ETB ability, but you don't have to pay the full 5 mana for a Mold Drifter to get the 2/2 flyer. You just pay the 3 mana to get sort of like a divination instead. So we have Evoke spells, another cycle of them in all the colors, in Modern Horizons 2. And we need to ask ourselves, are these cards good in Commander? If so, why? If they're bad, if so, why? So Solitude is the first one we're going to talk about. It's got Flash, Lifelink, and Evoke, and an ETB ability. But let's just look at the idea that if you are to evoke a card like this, what happens? So let's read Solitude. 3 white-white for a 3-2 elemental incarnation with Flash, Lifelink, and when Solitude enters the battlefield, exile up to one other target creature. That creature's controller gains life equal to its power.
Do you want to evaluate the creature on just that creature right now, or do you want to do the evoke?
Yeah, let's evaluate just that. So this is a 5-mana Flash, Lifelink, Swords to Plowshares.
It's great. Like think about like Chupacabras or like these ETB other creatures that kill something. A lot of times they're at 4, but this is Flash is amazing.
Yeah.
It exiles, and its body is a little bit more relevant as a 3-2.
And you can blink it.
Yeah.
An ETB ability means you can use this multiple times. And Swords of Plowshares, you know, would you play Swords at 3 mana? Yeah, probably at instant speed. Would you play it at 5 mana if you could blink it and recur it all the time?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Probably. Actually, yeah. And it had a body attached to it. You can get it back. And okay. So just on its face, like, I think that Solitude is quite playable, but maybe a little bit slow.
Yeah, a little higher mana cost. Yeah. 5 mana is not what you wanted to pay for a removal spell.
Okay. But we haven't finished reading the card yet. I interrupted Jimmy.
The last line of text says, evoke, exile a white card from your hand. So, there is not a lower mana cost for this. The mana cost is actually instead a card cost. It's like Force of Will, where or the Force of Series, Force of Vigor and all that, where you can exile another card that shares that same color as this from your hand and then cast Solitude for free. So, you can be completely tapped out and then evoke Solitude out, get rid of any white card in the world, a Timeless Dragon maybe, and then play this for free and Flash instant speed, exile a creature.
See, I think that that's what's really key too, is that this has Flash, and so it really does become a sort of free Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah.
Allowing you to interact with your opponent's creatures at instant speed, whenever you want, whenever you're threatened.
And the cost is not mana, but it is another card from your hand. So now instead of a 1-for-1, you are 2-for-1-ing yourself, which means you're spending 2 cards to get rid of one on the other side of the battlefield. Typically, you can actually exile your own stuff as well with this card.
So that's the theme of all of these evoke creatures that we're talking about in this cycle, is that it is not a mana cost, but a card advantage cost. And actually, I think that is a pretty steep cost in our format.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people feel like cards are plentiful and that they're free and that, you know, and a lot of times, yeah, you've built up your engine, so you have a lot of cards in your hand. But at its base, throwing away the card is a very steep cost and you shouldn't do it lightly. But this is flexible. If you're going to die, you know, if something's going to attack you.
I'll pay a card anytime. If an Eldrazi comes at me,
gosh.
It's about to destroy me.
Yes. Like, just think of all the commanders out there that could just make your opponent's deck just go off. And suddenly you're like, oh, no, thank you, Atali. No, you know, no, thank you to any of them.
You're going to die to commander damage. This is a card that will save your life. And typically Swords of Plowshares, Path to Exiles, they're getting rid of the most powerful and impactful thing on the board. So losing a card on top of that, in this case, I think Solitude's power level says, yes, that is totally fine if you need one for yourself for that. Now look at Force of Negation and Force of Vigor. Both of those cards are very good, very much played, and very expensive these days. I could see Solitude being in that same world. Again, white needs more tools, and this is a great way to do so, because at the end of the day, you don't have to evoke it. If you just have 5 mana up, you can still flash this out and treat it like an instant Swords of Plowshares.
Yeah, flicker it, reanimate it, you know, it's just, it's so useful that it's attached to a creature too. And so the level of flexibility on this is insane. This is another just white staple.
Play it in your Rune of the Hidden Realms deck, your Eldrazi Displacer deck, your deck with Nithroi that can reanimate it, Caridor, because Caridor can actually re-evoke it from the graveyard. He doesn't have to pay the mana cost. Pretty nice. So yeah, I like this card a lot. I don't think I'm the only person in Solitude.
I know,
this card.
Right? I don't think that we're convincing people. They're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know. This card's good. Okay, cool. Talk about the next one.
I think that the information that we bring to the table is that people are blanket thinking this is amazing, and they're going to be very willing to throw away a white card to kill something relevant. But I just caution that is way more of a cost than anyone says.
Yeah.
I see way too many people force a willing things that don't matter, that put them down a card, you know, and that card is a very big cost.
Yeah, and now if you have a lot of card draw, sure, no problem. But just keep in mind that when we talk about the other evoke creatures in this cycle, some of their evoke costs, you're going to be like, nope, I never want to do that because the effect isn't good enough for that card.
Yeah. All right. Timeless Dragon. 3 white for a 5/5 flying dragon with planes cycling for 2. That means you can discard this card and look for a planes. Any planes card.
Yeah, yeah. So it could be a card that says has a planes subtype on it.
Yeah. It also has Eternalize for 2 white. That means that you can exile it from your graveyard and it can become a 4/4 zombie.
Okay. So Eternal Dragon throwback, right? That's pretty nice. I like that.
But Eternal Dragon, it needed an upgrade because Eternal Dragon was not good and not played.
Yeah.
Eternal Dragon basically also had plane cycling. It's like, cool, it had plane cycling, but it costs so much mana during your upkeep to get it back to your hand so you could play it again and just...
Yeah, you pay 3 white to get it back and then play 5 white to get a 5/5 flyer. In this case, you're paying 5 mana for a 5/5 flyer, and then when you Eternalize it, you're paying 4 mana for a 4/4 flyer. This is the power creep of Magic the Gathering in a nutshell right here.
But even with this amount of power creep, I don't know if it's that great because, like, do we want a vanilla 5/5 flyer or a vanilla 4/4 flyer?
Yeah. Do you want a plane cycler? Maybe.
Actually, I think that plane cycling is super good because plane cycling is the kind of thing that lets you play fewer lands.
Yeah.
So effects that let you play fewer lands and still hit your mana, have your mana be reliable, is really good. So if this is kind of free... then yeah, but yeah. That's a slippery slope to just start cutting lands for these kinds of cards. But it is something that can help you, you know,
it'll definitely smooth out your game. Yeah. And not to mention, it can also fix your mana. If you're in a cycling deck, a card like this could be a little more interesting. But
on a cycling deck, I would 100% play this. I think that it's great in a cycling deck.
It's cute though. I like it.
It's still like a 2-for-1. It's still value because you can plane cycle and then eternalize it. Yeah. So essentially what that is a 6 mana 5/5 flyer that drew you a planes. But again, that's
4/4 flyer that drew you planes.
Sorry. 4/4 flyer that draws you a planes.
Now that's a card that I think is actually fine for especially mono white decks.
It's fine. You know, on an installment plan, it's fine. But you're not like super stoked about it.
Yeah, you're not going crazy. Okay, so that is white in Modern Horizons 2. I'm pleasantly surprised. I think Solitude is amazing. I like Sarah's Emissary quite a bit, and obviously Esper Sentinel. My goodness.
Resurgent Belief has Replenish on a card. Like, I didn't think I would see that again. That's crazy.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, we're going to move on to black. We're going to talk about black cards right now, and we're going to start off strong with Archon of Cruelty.
Oh, yeah.
6 black, that's 8 mana for a 6/6 flying Archon. Whenever Archon of Cruelty enters the battlefield or attacks, target opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, discards a card, and loses 3 life. You draw a card and gain 3 life.
Wow, so this is very similar to Cruel Ultimatum, which is a Grixis card, so it's blue, black, and red. But it doesn't say sacrifice a creature or planeswalker. It's sacrifice a creature, discards 3 cards, and loses 5 life, and then you sort of do the opposite. In this case, it's a creature that's 8 mana, but whenever it ETBs or attacks, an opponent basically gets hosed. They sacrifice a creature or planeswalker, sometimes not relevant, discards a card, sometimes can hurt, and loses 3 life. Those all 3 together, I think, make a difference. And not to mention, you can play this, give it haste in some way, and attack someone, and then they're doing that twice, and you're going to draw 2 cards and gain 6 life as well. That's pretty powerful. Oh,
man, if you can, I think that's the power that you're talking about. Cheating this into play, giving haste, like sneak attacking it into play. You mentioned Chainer Nightmare Adept.
Yep,
you know,
it gives it haste.
Being able to get it into play. And that's what you want to do. You want to cheat it in. Because casting this for 8 mana, I love that you get the effect once, but... someone's got to kill this, right?
Yeah.
Like, just casting it for 8 mana. Like, 8 mana spells need to end the game. And this is this is powerful, but it's a very slow game ender.
Right? Yeah, so you want to be able to reanimate it or use, like, Belby, Corrupted Observer, to get it out very early, like, turn 3. A cheaper version of a card that does similar things is Vindictive Lich, and we've seen that do a lot of work as well. So if you're looking for this effect, Archon of Cruelty might not be where you want to go. Maybe you want to play a Vindictive Lich instead, or this is just in your big reanimator deck. You're going to toss this into the bin, you're going to get it on the battlefield. The nice thing is that it immediately does its effect, so that's pretty cool. That's a strong ETB. It's just an 8-mana card, so...
I jumped in to read Archon of Cruelty so that you could read the next one, Jim.
Oh, thanks. This might be the most pushed card of the set. It's Douthi Voidwalker. Black for a creature Douthi Rogue. That's a 3/2. Its first line of text is Shadow. So this creature can block or be blocked only with creatures with shadow. So it's essentially unblockable, unless you have another creature out there that has shadow on it. It also says, if a card will be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead, exile it with a void counter on it. That's Leyline of the Void, basically. And then there's another line of text where you tap and sacrifice Dalthy Voidwalker. Choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a void counter on it. You may play it this turn without paying its mana cost. Okay. This is too much. This is quite simply too much.
I thought I was giving Jimmy a treat by reading this, but now he's like angry.
I mean, I'm angry, but I'm playing it in Marchesa because you can sack it with a plus one, plus one counter and get it back.
Oh my
god. So there's so many cards, parts about this card that's pushed. Let's just talk about the if a card be put anywhere into an opponent's graveyard, you exile it with a void counter instead. That by itself, if this was just a black enchantment that said that is playable in EDH, it's good.
Yeah, we would be urging you, like, you need Graveyard Interruption, please play this card. Like, it's worth it.
It's also asymmetrical, so it does not affect your graveyard.
Ugh. Okay, so
that by itself good. Would already that's make good. A good card.
And some people, by the way, there are some decks out there that do want the body. They want a 3-power unblockable, like Sig River Cutthroat or Ninja decks or something like that. Do want something that is that can get damage through and that can be really difficult to interact with, difficult to block. So
that's why it's so good at Marchesa, because you get a plus one counter on it because it has shadow. It has an amazing effect on it, and then you can sack it. It'll come back because of Marchesa, and you get to play that card. That's the crazy thing, is you can play that card without paying its mana cost. This isn't like a card where it imprints and you can only exile one thing at a time. Every single thing gets exiled with void counters on it. And so if someone discards something, if it gets milled, if it gets placed there any from the battlefield, you get to play that. If it's an Eldrazi, you know?
Oh my gosh. I also like that it's any card. It doesn't even just hit creature cards. It just hits any card.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I think this gets around the shuffle effects of Eldrazi too, because it says instead. So it goes in the graveyard instead of doing whatever happens, you exile it instead. So the fact that you can just sacrifice this on as early as turn 3 and play that card is really nuts to me. Really nuts.
It's crazy.
You can pay it. You don't have to pay the mana cost. And it affects everything. So if someone hits a board wipe and their huge, crazy 7-drop, 8-drop dies, Dalthy Voidwalker, you know, if it survives the board wipe, I don't know.
It even says play. You can, like, just play a land.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Even if this is just, like, tap, like, get a land, like an extra land drop is actually still fine? This is so good.
I feel like this is mythic power level. I think if they wanted to bring it down a notch, it wouldn't have shadow. It'd be like a 1-1. It would cost more mana. And then when you sack it, you would exile it. But the fact that you can recur this back and redo it over and over again is what makes this card so very, very good.
It's good on so many levels. I mean,
yeah, it's great.
It's great.
This card is just nuts.
Okay.
Cardking.com/commandzonepickle. If they still have them, because that card's going to sell like hotcakes. Dalthy cakes. Okay.
Let's look at the next card. It is the next card in the Evoke cycle. It's Grief.
Solitude and Grief. These are very emo names.
Good names. Yeah. 2BB for a 3/2 menacing elemental incarnation. Menace,
yeah. Yes. Or menacing. I like menacing, too. That's cool.
When Grief enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. Jimmy's already down on this. It also has Evoke. Exile a black card from your hand.
Good grief, as Charlie Brown would say. The reason I don't like this card is that I personally never, ever play effects like Duress or Thoughtseize or things that look in the hand and then get rid of a card from it. Especially if it's discarding, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah, I think that if you, the higher the power level you are, the more likely you'll look at Grief and think that it's something that you'd want to play because, you know, you're willing to give up card advantage by going after what your opponents have in hand. If you can save the game by, you know, taking something critical out of your opponent's hand, then Grief can be worth it. But for the most part, what are you going to take? Like their ramp spell?
Yeah.
You know, the big creature that's coming down a little bit later. Taking out only one card from one opponent in a multiplayer game means that they're down a card, sure, but like...
You might be down two because you had to Evoke this.
Oh my gosh.
It also doesn't have flash, so that means you have to do it on your turn, which makes it a little worse as well. So I think, look, if you're going to be flickering this or reanimating it a bunch and you have a high-powered meta that demands hand disruption, then this is playable.
And there are decks that have discard built around it, like we talked about Torok in one of these ones right now. ultimately, here's where I think it stands. I think this card's going to be insane in Modern, and so it's going to be way too expensive for me to want to buy it and put it in a Commander deck.
Yeah.
I just like, if, even if I get one, I'll be like, oh, hello, Modern friend. Here. Like,
right, right.
Here's your grief. Let me get three other cards that I like.
We should make a note that Modern Horizons 2 is a set literally meant to print new cards into Modern, and as such, that market of players is also going to affect the prices of cards. So cards like Grief, Good Grief, they may cost a lot because of Modern and not Commander. So don't be tricked. All right, next up is Magus of the Bridge, another in the Magus of series, which gives us classically powerful cards but printed on creatures instead. Before, there was Magus of the Wheel, Magus of the Balance, I think, Magus of the Bazaar, Candelabra, all that. Yeah. This time, this is Bridge from Below. So this is black, black, black for a 4/4 creature human wizard. Whenever a non-token creature is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, you create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Whenever a creature is put into an opponent's graveyard from the battlefield, you exile Magus of the Bridge. So there's a chance you could play this for 3 mana, and then someone sacks a creature and immediately gets rid of it.
Jimmy, immediately going for the downside.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think that people will compare it to Bridge from Below, and that is actually a very popular card, and basically people would mill bridges into their own graveyard and create a bunch of zombies.
Mm-hmm.
That worked because you had 4 copies of Bridge, and you had really reliable ways to put them into your graveyard.
And your deck was built around it too.
Yeah, and a handful of zombies could win a game of 1v1 with 20 life.
Yeah.
Magus of the Bridge is not doing any of those things, so you have to think about it. Okay, Magus of the Bridge is going to die. It's not going to attack well, so nope. It being a 4/4 for 3 doesn't really factor in very much at all. It's going to die. How many zombies does this need to create?
6. No, probably 3.
I think 3 zombies, like one, a black man. If this created 3 zombies, I'd be fine. Yeah. How many hoops do you have to jump through to get those 3 zombies?
A lot. And your deck needs to be built around this, right? Because you have to be sacking things from non-tokens from your graveyard to the graveyard from your battlefield. Or you have to find a way to, like, if you're building your deck around Bridge from Below, then yeah maybe Magus of the Bridge works.
So what about this in an Aristocrats deck?
I could see that happening. You have to have a pretty good setup for it to go. But again, just one opponent having a sack outlet means that you don't get to choose the timing of this, because they can send you into your combo at any time by saying, all right, I'm going to sack a creature. Magus of the Bridge is going to trigger. Now you have to do everything in response to that. Otherwise, the effect goes away.
Yeah. And honestly, this will never sit around on the battlefield creating value turn after turn, because if anyone wants it dead, hey, Jimmy, do you want to deal with Josh's Magus of the Bridge?
Yeah, swing at me with that
attack
one.
With a 1-1.
Yeah, okay, cool.
There you go. Okay, your Magus of the Bridge is dead.
Not to mention, it's whenever a creature, so you can swing your little 1-1 tokens to get rid of the Magus. But if you're in control of the Magus, you obviously have to be sacrificing non-token creatures. Okay, that is going to do it for half of our episode. We have another amazing half of cards coming up, including finishing off black and going into some of the very exciting multicolored cards. But before we get to it, a quick message from our mid-roll sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
What's up? We are back with more Modern Horizons 2 review. We've had some real big hits so far with the Douthi Voidwalkers and half the things in white. So let's see if black can finish it off strong, and then we're going to dive into the multicolored cards. So let's talk about a new Goyf.
Yep, it's Necro Goyf. 3 black black for a star 4.
It's a star.
It's a creature, Lurgoyf. Necrogoyf's power is equal to the number of creature cards in all graveyards.
Okay.
At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player discards a card. And it has madness for one black black.
So if you discard this card, you discard it into exile. And when you do, you can pay the madness cost for it, which is 3 mana instead of 5 mana. And then it gets cast. And you can ignore timing restrictions with that, too.
First off, I love that it has madness. I feel like there aren't enough over-the-top commander madness abilities.
Yes.
Like when you build a madness deck, it feels like...
Yeah, a lot of sus cards. Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, am I jumping through these hoops just to play a lightning bolt? Like, where's the power? And this feels like a very powerful effect. Now, it's not going to go in every single deck, but this effect at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player discards a card.
Yeah, each player. So that could happen 3 times around the table after you play the Necrogoyf, but when it gets back to you.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
You do have to discard cards yourself, but there are enchantments that are already played in decks that do this, you know? And because this has madness, it synergizes with all these other things. So you have redundant effects that make everyone discard. And if you have one of those redundant effects going, you can discard and play this Lurgoyf for its madness cost and then make people discard even more cards.
Yeah. Now, Mark Rosewater specifically said they wanted madness to be a little more viable in command or in modern, so that's why they added some more madness cards in the set. Necrogoyf is obviously a standout in that world. If you're playing Anya Falcon Wrath, this seems like an automatic include into your deck because it gives you another way to discard a card and to just cycle through your deck.
Yeah, but discard decks like Tiny Bones, Trinket Thief, or Turok Dread Cantor just seems like a no-brainer for this kind of card.
Yeah, now I don't think this is ever going to be like a game ender because typically with these cards, you put up Mordior as the comparison.
Mortivore,
yeah. They don't end games typically. They don't have trample. They can get blocked. So I'm not as caring.
It's got 4 toughness, right?
Yeah, I don't care as much.
But it could get really big, right?
Yeah, like, it could get big. It could be like a 24 at some point, maybe a little bigger. But it's not going to win you the game. So you're looking more for the effect of, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, they discard a card, and you can madness it for 3 mana. So that's a pretty good rate for an effect like that.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a look at...
This one's spicy.
Yeah.
Persist. It's a little Kithkin coming out there, right? I think it's a Kithkin. 1 in the black for a sorcery. Return target non-legendary creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter on it.
That's such a clever card.
Wow. Because
it's persist and it has a -1. It has a persist counter on it.
Yeah, I love that.
That's really great.
And it only costs 1 in the black to do so at sorcery speed. This is a very strong reanimator effect. The only downside is that it can't be a legendary creature and it will come to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter on it. So it might die if it's got 1 toughness. It will die. If it got 1 toughness, don't do it to a 1 toughness creature.
Also, it's only your graveyard. Some of these reanimation effects, you can hit your opponent's graveyard, so it gives you more options. We just talked about 3 kind of downsides, huh?
Yeah, do they matter? The -1/-1 counter, I'd say no, because I don't think you're bringing back a tiny thing with this.
Yeah, the only thing it matters on is your Woodfall Primus.
Ah, very good point.
But what about Undying Creature?
Yeah. You're bringing this back on something big. If you have a way to put +1/+1 counters on it, you can negate that effect. I think this card's so powerful. I don't care about the fact that it can't target other graveyards. This is a super cheap rate. We play Reanimate, which is sorcery for 1 black mana, and you lose life. It can target legendary creatures, but oftentimes I'm bringing back all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah, I think that Necromancy is good, you know, and that's 3 mana for a vulnerable enchantment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we get bigger. A lot of times you can see it pretty reliably at like 4 and 5. But that means that you're not cheating mana as much. The cheaper these reanimation effects are, the more opportunities you have to cheat mana of the creature that you're putting on the battlefield. And so if you're paying 5 and getting a 6-drop back from your graveyard or a 7-drop back from your graveyard,
it's okay.
You're cheating 2 mana. Thumbs up. You know what I mean? But
like,
this has the potential to like get that 7 mana creature back earlier on turn 2. Suddenly that has a bigger impact because your big creature's hitting the battlefield sooner.
Yep.
And the mana cost really matters with this stuff. Along with, by the way, being able to go back to back, being able to say, I play this effect to pitch this card and then I play persist to get it back.
Because it's just 2 mana.
Exactly. So it really does, being this cheap really does open up a lot more lines than you think. I'm just sad I can't get legendary creatures because there's some cool legendary creatures I want to bring back.
It's true. I do see this as one of your many reanimate spells in your deck. It's better than your animate deads, I think, in a lot of ways, because the animate dead, if it gets removed, so goes your creature, but persist just brings it back. And then I would say black is the color of a lot of legendary matters decks like Kethis, Primeval's Glorious Rebirth, Arvod the Cursed, all cares about legendary stuff. So it does have a little downside because Black does seem to care about that idea more than anything else. But you're running Persist on top of your reanimates and your other animate dead spells.
For sure. Okay, let's talk about another card in the cycle. It is Profane Tutor, and it's in the Suspend cycle.
Yeah.
So this has Suspend 2 for 1 and a black. Search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle.
It's a Demonic Tutor. Oof. It costs the same amount. It's a sorcery. Now you do cast it 2 turns after, but I think this is actually very good.
I think it's good too, honestly. So when we're talking about the case scenarios, I think that Demonic Tutor, a lot of people play it as a value Demonic Tutor in many situations, right? They're like, okay, I'm just going to play this and get what I need right now.
Yeah.
You know, if you are playing Demonic Tutor for its combo potential, if you're playing Demonic Tutor to be like more toolboxy to get the answer that you need right now, then Profane Tutor gets worse. But a lot of the times, you're just like, people play Demonic Tutor like, all right, you know, I drew it. Cool. I'm going to cast it, get what I need, whatever I need right now.
Right now,
and
yeah.
And play what I need right now.
Consecrated Sphinx.
Yeah.
Toxic Deluge.
One of the things about tutors is that they also get worse with how much mana you pay for them. So, you know,
Diabolic
Tutor costs 4.
Yeah, do you see that played very often?
Abysmal.
Really.
I think that's, yeah, I think that people play it in budget decks and they kind of pretend that they like it, but I don't think it's good because you're adding 4 mana to the card that you're going to play and you have way fewer opportunities to be able to cast the spell and then cast what you're going to do.
Especially if it's a big drop. But I mean, obviously, tutoring cards to your hand is still powerful. So you have to ask yourself now, do I mind waiting 2 turns or I would rather just play a Diabolic Tutor and get it the turn I want it?
So, but sometimes the mana cost prevents you from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The time prevents you from doing it too. So both of those cards are quite poor at getting that Toxic Deluge that you need right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're both, but this one is better at getting you that Consecrated Sphinx. Because just imagine that you're like, okay, cool. I'll suspend this on turn 2. And then you wait 2 turns, you know, and then you know what you're getting. And then you can spend all of your mana to cast your Sphinx right when you need it.
Right, because when you suspend it, you cast it for free. I actually think that sometimes a Demonic Tutor cast on turn 2 would be better off if it was cast on turn 6 or 7. Now knowing what threat needs to get dealt with or someone becomes the arch enemy. And you're like, okay, I need to get a specific answer to them. I'm glad I didn't tutor until now, because sometimes I'll tutor for something, get it, and being like, great, I have this Cyclonic Rift that I'm not going to play for the next 13 turns of this game. Would it have been better for me to Demonic Tutor later on, or like even a few turns later and said, hey, I actually need card draw right now more than anything else? So I think as long as you're drawing Profane Tutor before turn like 5, it's really, really good, because you're okay waiting a couple turns to tutor because you're going to have more information.
You have more information, you see what you need, and you get what you need in that moment. The moment can change. Just
and
like
I don't think any deck should ever be built around needing a tutor to make its thing work. So tutors in a lot of ways,
combo
to me,
decks do that. That's why this is not good deck.
Exactly.
In that situation.
I think in general, right, like a tutor is like a cherry on top of like, or a little bit of redundancy to know you can get the pieces that are really important. But your deck should function without the tutor. So I think in this case, a tutor is still powerful enough. The fact that you're going to cast it for free 2 turns after you suspend it, it's pretty good.
How threatening is this? Someone suspends a Profane Tutor. What do you do as an opponent?
I just wait and do nothing, right? Typically, you want to counter the thing they're tutoring for if you can. But what are you going to do? When they play a Demonic Tutor, I just go, yep, you got to find the best card in your deck right now, and that's how it works. Profane Tutor, it's like, you got to find the best card in your deck in a couple of turns. Maybe I hold back the big threat that I know is going to draw their attention, but I'm still going to probably play my game mostly the same. Because you have no guarantees. Maybe they're going to get something to help them out instead of attacking you or whatever.
So this seems a little bit less threatening than say the Replenish one, right?
Yeah, definitely less game ending, because the Replenish one just says this is the way that I win the game. Profane Tutor could say this is the way that I get back in the game. This is the way that I clear the board. This is the way I draw cards. This is a way that I shut down the arch enemy. There's so many different options.
That seems pretty powerful too. That seems very powerful.
It does, but it doesn't say, you know, unless it's a combo deck, this usually doesn't say I'm going to win the game if you let this resolve.
I think it's because it's hidden information. People look at your graveyard with the other one and they're like, oh, you are a threat.
With
this one, it's like, it's just like a Demonic Tutor. They don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so if they know your deck well enough, they can say, oh, they're going to combo.
Yep. You know? And you can play Profane Tutor in any deck you want. that can play black. Unmarked Grave is our final black card. It is one in the black for a sorcery. Search your library for a non-legendary card. Put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle. So kind of similar to Persist in that it is specifically looking at non-legendaries. But one in the black, sorcery, get Entomb. Get a card into your graveyard.
So Entomb is one mana, instant. Okay, so a few key differences, but Entomb is $25 and it's played in 25,000 decks.
Whoa.
It's actually just an amazing ability. You wouldn't think that
it's just a tutor.
Yeah, right? Just put something into your graveyard. It's like, wait, what? It just goes in my graveyard? Your graveyard can be an extension of your hand, especially if you have cards like Persist. And so Unmarked Grave being worse than Entomb doesn't matter. It's still like the second best effect of this.
Yeah, and it's just one mana more. Sure, it's not an instant, but you get to put a lot of stuff in there. Buried Alive is another really powerful card that gets played in these decks quite a bit. I think this is right in between there.
Yeah, Buried Alive is three mana and can get three creatures into there. I like that you can get non-creatures. It just has to be non-legendary. So you can throw, you know, your Life from the Loam or your Dredge Enabler in there. You can throw, you know, your, obviously those creatures to reanimate or those creatures that have activated abilities from the graveyard in there. Like, you can do a lot of stuff with this.
Yeah, if you have Moldrotha or Armix or Lurrus of the Dream Den, they all want non-creatures in your graveyard as well. So Unmarked Grave seems pretty powerful there.
It's the same. It's the same conversation we have about non-legendary. Sometimes you're like, you just got to look through your deck and you have to find out how much that impacts you.
Totally.
I don't think it impacts you as much with this one because if you're building a Reanimator deck, you're just like, all right, you know, I'm going to run, you know, Archon of Cruelty. Like, instead of, I don't know, this other legendary demon, you know, that could be powerful, Vilas or something like that. You're like, I'm just going to run Archon of Cruelty instead. I've built my deck around the cards that I have access to.
Or both. Run both.
Or both.
Okay, let's move on to the last category for today's set review, and these are the multicolored cards in the set. We've got 7 or 8 cards to look at here, and they're pretty awesome. Yeah. Starting off with the dude in the commercials, it's Dacon, Shadow Slayer. This is pretty fun here. White, a blue, and a black, Esper, for a legendary Planeswalker with zero loyalty. Dacon enters the battlefield with a number of loyalty counters on him equal to the number of lands you control. Plus one to surveil two. So you look at the top two cards of your library. You can decide whether you put them on top or into the graveyard. -3, exile target crecreature. And -6, you may put an artifact card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. Okay. Dacon on turn 3 with 3 lands is coming in as a 3 loyalty planeswalker. It can surveil or exile a target creature. Dacon on turn 5 or 6 that comes in with 6 lands, you can immediately ultimate him and use that 3 mana spell to put an artifact from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. It could be a creature, it could just be an artifact. Pretty strong.
I think that this is really strong because the worst case scenario of 3 mana exile target creature is fine. You know what I mean? Unmake is a similar card. It doesn't see a lot of play, but there are 3 mana exile creature effects that are fine in Commander, totally played. If you happen to have 4 mana, you know, 4 lands when this comes in and you just want to get rid of a creature, this still only costs 3. You know what I mean? So your removal spells still only cost 3, but then you have this surveilling thing that's giving you a card advantage that's still on the battlefield. That's great.
Yeah, this seems just awesome, to be honest, because it gets better the later in the game it goes. Commander games, you better have more than 6 lands out in play, unless you're me, by the end of the game. So that means Dacon coming out later in the game, turns 6, 7, or 8. Instant ultimate means you could put a Blightsteel Colossus onto the battlefield, Chromatic Orrery, Bolas's Citadel.
Oh, I want Bolas's Citadel. That sounds nice.
Yeah, that sounds real
and
nice.
And by the way, the Surveil helps you get there because you
can, that's right.
Like, you, Blightsteel, not so much because it'll get shuffled in, but like, you Surveil and you're like, oh, Bolas's Citadel. You're like, I can't cast that. You throw it in the graveyard and you still have access to it when your Dacon finally ultimates.
Yeah, and you're probably running other artifact recursion cards as well. If you have Aminatu and you're blinking Dacon, he comes back with more loyalty counters later in the game.
You're right.
Yeah, so I like this Planeswalker quite a bit. I think it's just got so many modes to it that are always relevant. And even the minus, right? Like, I would just play this as a 3 mana exile target creature.
Yeah, just a modal exile creature. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Jimmy, do you want Do you wanna know a cool piece of bling aura thing?
Okay, cool.
So when this was spoiled, some Command Zone fans tweeted at me and messaged me that on our bling episode, I have a Dacon Blackblade that has this art as an artist proof on the back.
Oh.
So from our bling episode, they were like, DJ has a Dacon Blackblade with this exact art on it.
So
Richard Kane Ferguson basically just said like, oh, I have another version of Dacon that I love to draw, and he threw it on the new card.
And how long ago did you get that?
Years. We were still going to Magic Fest.
Amazing.
We were going to GPs.
The olden time.
We were going to GPs back then. Woo!
Okay, next up, another great card. Really excited for this one as well.
Oh my gosh. This is going to be another staple.
Yeah.
It's Damn.
Damn is Kendrick Lamar says hello.
Damn is black for a sorcery, destroy target creature. A creature destroyed this way can't be regenerated.
Okay, it's a black removal spell.
Black removal spell.
Wait.
It has overload for 2WW. So when you play a card with overload, you basically replace target with each. So destroy each creature. A creature destroyed this way can't be regenerated.
Wrath of God.
This is Wrath of God with an alternate casting cost of black.
Right.
Or so, a removal spell with an alternate casting cost of Wrath of God.
Wow. So this is not a Damnation reprint. Sorry to get your hopes up there. It's just a Damn.
Yeah. It's black and white. That's really important. There are mana symbols in the text box, means that this has to go in the multicolored section. This is an Orzhov card.
This card is sweet, though. I mean, this is just such a good board wipe for any decks that can play black and white because of the fact that it's modal. You can cast it just as a single removal spell if you only get rid of one thing, or overload and wipe the board. Having that flexibility, fantastic.
By the way, black at 2 mana, oftentimes their removal spells are still conditional, non-artifact, monocolored,
right?
You know, things like that. They've come with conditions, and this is just kill something. And then Wrath of God is so playable. It's so good. This is just a new staple in decks that can cast it. It's amazing.
I think even if you added 1 mana to each of the sides of these, so it's 1 black to destroy a creature and 3 WW for the board wipe, it's still pretty darn good. So that just shows how good I think
pretty
this card
damn
is.
Good.
Pretty damn good. We can say that word now because Wizards printed it on the card. Damn.
Okay.
Me too. Every time I said the word, editors just put the card up a bunch of times in front of my mouth. Ah, damn. Great card. Moving on, we have Aethersworn Sphinx. 7WW for a 4/4 artifact creature Sphinx. It has affinity for artifacts, which means its spells cost 1 less for each artifact you control. It has flying and cascade.
So, Jimmy, is affinity a fair, safe ability?
Oh, I don't know. It's one of the best decks in Modern, that's for sure.
They printed affinity on things, and they just broke. You know, they made 7 mana 4/4s. Just that's it. 7 mana 4/4s, you know, or 4 mana 2/2s, little frog mites.
Like
they went crazy. And now we have, granted it's a different time and this is different, but now we have this 9 mana affinity reducing 4/4 flying
with cascade.
And it cascades not for what you paid for it, but its mana value. So it will cascade seeing everything less than 9.
Wow.
You could cast an 8-drop for free, but the affinity could make this only cast white blue.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. In Modern Horizons 2, I don't know if you noticed, they like stacking 3 lines of text on all of these suckers. So this is pretty powerful. I think if you have a way to play this in a deck, and this is uncommon, by the way, we're talking about this in the set review.
Yeah.
If you have a way to play this, you have a ton of artifact generation in here. You got your, what was that white card we talked about? You have your Search
you
the Premises.
You finally have clues. Clues are doing something good now.
Or your Smothering Tithe, right? This could cost white, blue, and blam. Get you another huge creature potentially. You have blue, so you can brainstorm something to the top of your deck before you
tons
cast this as well.
Manipulation, yeah.
Mere Battlesphere, Thopter Assembly, Brea, any cards that create law of artifacts with it make Aethersworn Sphinx kind of a card that I think would be really good in those types of decks.
It's weird to have so much to say about an uncommon, but I'm a big fan. I love it.
I think you'll see this for sure in those artifact decks. Just again, it's a free 2-for-1, right? And especially if you have top deck manipulation, you can get another 8-drop out of it by potentially only paying up, 2 mana at the minimum. Pretty nice.
All right. Next up, we have a Planeswalker. It's Gaiadrone Dihada.
Dihada. Gaiadrone. 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 Dihada. Who knows? GD.
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 1BR for a 4 loyalty Planeswalker. Dihada. Dihada. Protection from permanence with corruption counters on them.
Comes up with a 4 loyalty.
Yes. plus one. Each opponent loses two life and you gain two life. Put a corruption counter on up to one other target creature or planeswalker. Okay. Minus three. Gain control of target creature or planeswalker until end of turn. Untap it. Put a corruption counter on it. It gains haste until end of turn. Minus seven. Gain control of each permanent with a corruption counter on it.
Okay.
To get up to that ultimate, you have to plus three, plus one, three times, and then sub minus. It's going to be difficult
to
get to the ultimate.
Steal three things. And here's the thing. This is not a good doubling season commander because the corruption counters need to be on the cards before you're able to steal them with Dehada. So this is by itself just a one... one blue, black, red for loyalty planeswalker with a couple of interesting abilities.
So plus one, four mana to drain two and then keep a creature from attacking Dehada, not keep a creature from attacking you or your other planeswalkers, but just protect that one. That mechanic feels much better in 1v1 where there's like maybe one or two creatures. You can just say, hey, you know, you can't attack me with that one, and then you keep your planeswalker around.
Yeah, Dehada is insane in one-on-one, especially on an empty board. You just target their thing. They can never attack you with it because Dehada has protection from them.
Yeah, and then you tick up. They finally put down something big and relevant. You're like, okay, I'll steal that.
Everything I've been targeting since then, I've gained eight life in between then.
It's crazy.
So I think this deck is really good. Threaten effect as well on top. So if you have a stack outlet.
I think that you want the threaten effect because here's the thing. Ticking up in multiplayer, you neuter one creature. Someone's just going to attack Dehada, right?
Yep.
And it's just, she's going to die.
Bye-bye.
So I think that you want this minus three, this threaten effect. There are a few decks that could want a threaten. You play one of them, Jimmy.
Yeah, of course. It's Marchesa. I love this card so much. Every time I see cards in her colors, like Dehada, it's just nuts. There's also Obeka Brute Chronologist, which allows you to take that creature forever because you can end the turn before it needs to lose control at the end of turn, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And then people so there's a lot of stealing that you do in like Boros and other red based colors. You know, it's actually, there are only a couple that are in Grixis.
Mm-hmm.
But Marchesa is a big one. You know what I mean?
That's because, a big one.
You know, because it says you basically, it's a creature that you control. You can put it on and then it comes back and then you can keep it. It comes back
under your control. Right. Yeah.
You can keep it with Obeka, Admiral Beckett Brass. That's just more thematic where they have like a lot of stealing. She looks like a pirate.
Does she look
like a pirate?
Yeah, she looks piratey, but she does have, these look like squid tentacles. I'm not sure.
Oh, she's dangerous. I like those squid tentacles. If she's like,
there's a lot going on.
If she's
on
like
here.
An octopus on the bottom, that'd be very cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Or she is just, I don't know. She's a lot.
She's just evil.
Evil. She just looks very, very evil.
Corruption counter. She's corrupted. She's corrupted.
Corrupted. Okay. All right. Next up, we have Moderation. One white and a blue for an enchantment. You can't cast more than one spell each turn. Whenever you cast a spell, draw a card. Okay, so each turn, so this isn't just each turn cycle. You could be that deck that has four instants in it. You cast one on your turn, draw a card, pass turn, cast one on DJ's turn, one on Megan's turn, one on Maria's turn.
Okay, I feel like you need to do that because double spelling and casting multiple spells is one of the best things to do in Commander.
Triple spell.
You want to...
Win
Jimmy just one-ups me.
Quadruple
Yo,
spelling.
Jimmy, quadruple.
That's how you win the game.
Quadruple spelling is the way to win the game. And also, by the way, like you want to have a real curve. And so oftentimes you'll want to, you know, cantrip into something else, you know? So this is a real cost, one spell per turn, you know? But if you play the all instance deck, you play Wrath Capuchin, where you're always playing something on every person's turn.
Elisha of the Infinite, you always have casting stuff at the top of your deck. Yeah. I like that.
Otherwise, I mean, I feel like you need to draw a lot of cards off of this because, you know, three or four mana, just draw one card a turn.
Not good.
Not good because it limits you way too much, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of these cards, like for example, Recycle in green, Null Profusion in black, they have this similar effect wherever you play something, you get to draw something, but like they feel like Glimpse of Nature where you kind of like churn through your deck. You're like, bam, 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 bam. This one is so much more slower card advantage. But could you see yourself playing this in like a control deck?
I don't think so.
On your turn deck?
Because what if you need to, I don't know, like you'd have to find a way to get rid of the moderation at some point. I think if you want to combo off and win or whatever you're doing. For me, this seems like a very much constructed level card for modern, much less so than one that's going to be great in EDH.
I mean, we can abuse it more than modern because we have more players to play turns on.
That's true. But it's still a pretty big thing that you have to deal with. That seems like a lot. And I don't know if I'm there yet.
I know what you mean.
I'm not there yet. Okay, next up we got Priest of Fel Rites, white and a black for a 2/2 human warlock. You can tap it and pay 3 life, sacrifice it, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate only as a sorcery. And you also have Unearth, so you can pay 3 a white and a black to return this card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it gains haste, and it would be exiled if it leaves the battlefield or at the beginning of the next end step. You can Unearth only as a sorcery. So you can Unearth this, tap it, pay 3 life, and then sack it to return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, or you can play this for 2 mana, wait a turn, and then do that.
I like this a lot.
Yeah, so this is like a reanimation effect in black and white that you could potentially use twice, where you play the Priest of Fel Rites early, you use it, sacrifice it, pay the life, get a creature back, and then you unearth it on a future turn, and then you can tap it and do it the moment you unearth it without having to pay any extra mana to get another creature back, or maybe even the same one.
So having a reanimation effect on a creature is good and bad. You know, it's bad because it is more vulnerable. You know, this has to tap to happen. And so you can play this and people could be like, oh, well, I'm going to kill it before you have a chance to tap it and do your thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, you know, there's just way more ways to interact with a creature. But there are way more ways to interact with a creature. You can get this creature in, like, for example, you can get it into your graveyard with, you know, an Entomb or a Buried Alive. Yep. You can actually Buried Alive, get this creature and 2 other targets, put them all into your graveyard, so you have sort of a package in your deck. I think people are comparing this to Unburial Rites, but that's just because it's a double reanimation effect in black and white. But I actually like this a lot more.
Yep. I like it a lot too. Corpse Consort, Gravebreaker Lamia. There's a lot of ways to get creatures into your graveyard, and once they're there, it can be really effective. Especially because if you find a way to get the priest out without having to unearth it, you could use it, get into the graveyard, and then unearth it then. So this just says on its face, use me a lot, and I'm going to be able to get some big stuff back for you for the low, low cost of 3 life.
All right. Next, we have a multicolored card.
Yeah. It's definitely multicolored. You don't play this in your colorless deck unless you're crazy.
It's Scion of Draco. It's 12 mana for a 4/4 artifact creature dragon. It has domain. This spell costs 2 less to cast for each basic land type among lands you control.
So this is, on its face, kind of like a 5 color card in a way.
Yeah, that's why we're including it in the multicolored section rather than the artifact section, because really, like, are you playing? Anyways, so it's a 4/4 flyer. It also says each creature you control has vigilance if it's white, hexproof if it's blue, lifelink if it's black, first strike if it's red, and trample if it's green.
Okay, so it's giving keywords kind of like Odric Lunarok Marshall, but based on the color of the card, and the keywords it gives are all very similar to what the color likes to do. So white, vigilance, green, trample, black, lifelink, red, first strike, hexproof, blue.
Woo, but hexproof, man.
Yeah.
That is, I think that's the winner of all of them.
Oh,
being able to have
sure.
a creature come in and grant hexproof to other things, it's just really great.
Trample seems good too, obviously. Those are typically game enders. Now let's talk about the domain part of this. If you have one of each land type, how much does it cost to cast, DJ?
It costs, well, if it reduces by 2 for each one, so that reduces it by 10, so it costs 2 mana.
Wow.
2 mana, 4/4 flyer with...
But you have to have one of each of the basic land types.
What about a Triome on turn 1 and the other 2 land types on a dual land on turn 2?
Because that means a turn 2 Scion of Draco. No other creatures to grant its cool ability to, so it's just a 2 mana, 4/4 flyer.
Yeah, I think that that's where people are going to break it, is by getting a 2 to 3 mana 4/4 flyer, but in Commander, that's not good enough.
Yeah, that's definitely not good enough. It's definitely better if you have sort of like, right, you have green creatures that want trample or blue creatures that have hexproof and you are playing 5 colors, but this seems like it's actually a little bit more sort of niche than it may seem on the surface, because it's a really cool card. Don't get me wrong. I love it. And I think Odric decks and people that like doing that sort of like grant everything cool abilities deck, keyword decks, could have a lot of fun with this kind of card.
Mm-hmm. It could just slot into a lot of other different decks, like, you know, Niv-Mizzet Reborn, things like that. Animar
for sure.
You know, because also, like, if you think about it with Animar, you're like, well, we can never get it truly cheap. With Animar, you don't even need the basic. You could just domain this for 12 on an Animar deck.
Yeah.
But it grants Animar.
Well, domain for 3 lands, so it's 6 mana off, and then Animar is
so easy.
Get
it just reduces it.
Yeah, it gets hexproof, trample, and first strike.
Hexproof and Trample on Animar.
Wow, that's actually sick in Animar.
That's
I love this
so
card
good in Animar.
Yeah, and it's colorless, sure. So you don't need to worry about colored mana. At some point, you're definitely just playing this for free.
Yeah, I'm easily playing it for free.
Yeah, not to mention Animar can sometimes get to ungodly amounts of power because of Ancestral Statue or whatever to just make it huge, and then you're casting Sign of Draco and the game swing at once.
Absolutely. So I think that there's definitely decks that are going to play this, but the allure of this fast 2-mana 4/4 is lost on
computer. Yeah, that's not where you want to be with this for sure. Maybe
granted,
there's
abilities.
Maybe there's a Domain Modern deck looking to be built, but otherwise, this is a cool pump up your team type effect and give your blue creatures hex proof.
All right, Jimmy, we talked about all the white cards that we want to talk about, all the black cards, the multicolored cards that we want to talk about. And so, number one, tune in for the next episodes where we'll talk about the green and the red cards, another episode where we'll talk about the blue cards, the artifacts, the lands, all that good stuff. So definitely tons more stuff to talk about. But for these cards, which ones are you most hyped about that you're going to start putting in your commander decks?
So you heard me when I was excited at the beginning. It's Dalthy Voidwalker. This card to me is so powerful in Marchesa especially. I think it's just going to be a total house. I can't wait. The shadow is also really relevant because it gets in for the unblockable damage. I also really like Sarah's Emissary. It's an angel. I think this goes great in the Kalia of the Vast deck. It protects Kalia from, let's say, instants if you know people are waiting to path it, and also creatures if you need to get through on damage.
Okay, I think that I'm gonna, first off, those are great cards.
Thank you.
Not gonna lie about that. But I think I'm gonna go a little bit more dirtily that I'm super excited about Archon of Cruelty.
Oh.
I'm just excited about the big DJ. Yeah, just the big thing. I have a deck that sneaks things into play, like sneak attacks things in. And so I just wanna get this big thing into play and just smash someone and like make them discard two, sack two, and I draw two. And just have them cry a little bit. I think it sounds fun.
Well, what card today then did we talk about do you think is a new commander staple? I think this one's pretty obvious.
I think it's Esper Sentinel.
Yep.
Yeah. Just white is so hard up for card draw that a little thing that can slot into so many different decks that can guarantee you a couple cards if you just leave it on the battlefield is great.
Yeah, that's quite nice.
Its cost of inclusion is so low, I think that it's amazing.
That's great. We named a white card for the new staple. Out of Time, I think, is right up there as well. And, of course, Damn, we talked about it.
Damn, quite good. Yeah, actually, yeah. The only reason why I wouldn't name Damn, because Damn is actually safer. It's just, like, makes total sense. It's in Orzhov, though, so fewer decks can play it. But Damn is... Damn good.
Yeah. All right. To the listeners, what white, black, and multicolored cards are you going to be playing your commander decks? Are there any synergies that we missed that you think are super cool and you want to mention? Let us know in the comments. You can tweet at us, send us messages. We are everywhere. And of course, you might want to pick up a Damn of yourself, a Sarah's Emissary, and Out of Time, any of these amazing cards. An Esper Sentinel. Go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That is our affiliate link. Just by using that link, you are immediately helping out us, and you're just right on the website. There's nothing else you have to do. Buy the cards you need. You're going to anyway get them shipped to your house super quick, and then you can slot them into your deck and surprise everyone when you play a Modern Horizons 2 card that they haven't seen yet and catch them off guard. And of course, Ultra Pro, good sponsor of the show. Make sure you pick up some of their products if you want to sleeve up your deck. I just got a bunch of the new Coloss Eclipse sleeves. I'm going to be putting all my decks in them, and I can't wait to shuffle it up because that feels great.
Jimmy, when was the last time we did an end step?
Long, long, long time ago.
We're not doing one today because we decided we don't do them in set reviews, and that's...
We haven't sang much either, I guess, yeah.
I know.
So, you know what? Some people are like...
I don't sing very well. I know.
Some people are like, where's the songs?
I mean, we need songs.
Well, we miss them too, and we miss you commenting on how bad the songs are.
Of course we miss them.
All right, big thanks to our team here at the Command Zone. We have Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred the Soccer, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Metcalf, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, and Dan Sheehan. Dan's actually new. He's a new writer here. Some of you commented, you read his books before. Big welcome to Dan. And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Balmer, who does the living card animations that start our show. Sometimes behind us here on set, you can find him on Twitter at @LivingCardsMTG. And DJ, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me on the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel, all around the Command Zone. And I actually took a look at the reprints from this set recently. And so if you are like, ooh, what reprints can I play in Commander? Some good ones.
Very nice. So make sure you go and support DJ, subscribe to his stuff, and hit that notification bell as well. And we will see you all on the next set review for Modern Horizons 2.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to CommandCast. podcast at rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.